How's it going? My name is Mitch Doucette. I'm a first-year doctoral student at the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins. So this presentation represents my master's thesis work that I conducted at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. And I just want to quickly acknowledge my advisors and co-authors for this study. I have no relationships to disclose. So briefly, with this presentation is more generally geared towards the concussion issue within high school sports. So around 7 million U.S. high school athletes participate in sports each year. Generally, 300,000 sports-related concussions occur each year, and studies suggest overall concussion rates are between 0.75 and 0.49 per 1,000 exposures, which, depending on the study, is usually defined as one athlete playing one season of sport. Now, this is a public health issue and is significant just due to the negative impacts that concussions have in returning to play while you have a concussion among adolescents. And again, American football is generally thought to have the highest concussion rates, as Lauren pointed out. So in response to this public health issue, the Washington State passed the 2009 Lystat Law, which essentially created the concussion management process, which is concussion education for school staff, parents, and students, as well as removal from play and return to play process for concussed students to be entered into. So as a result, the Massachusetts Act relative to safety regulations for school athletic programs was passed in 2010, and it follows very directly from the Lystat Law. This directed the Department of Public Health to promulgate the Massachusetts Head Injuries and Concussions in Extracurricular Athletic Activities regulation. So currently, public health issues are geared towards evaluating implementation or barriers to and barriers to implementation for these regulations, as all 50 states and the District of Columbia have implemented these types of regulations. So the study sought out to determine how Massachusetts schools have implemented the regulation and to identify influential factors of the implementation process. So in order to do this, we set out and we did a qualitative multiple case study approach wherein Massachusetts high schools were considered our cases. Now we used a purposive sampling technique in which we stratified all of the Massachusetts high schools using their representative town or towns information. The Massachusetts household median income average demarcated between what we considered low and high social economic status, and the population size of 50,000, as defined by the U.S. Census Bureau, demarcated between rural and urban status. Now, 10 schools from each of the strata were randomly selected for recruitment, which resulted in 5 participating cases, and we conducted 19 semi-structured interviews with school personnel, which can include coaches, athletic directors, electric trainers, nurses, and in one instance, a health and wellness coordinator. Interviews lasted 25 to 50 minutes, and all but one of them were digitally recorded and transcribed verbatim. So analysis, we used a conventional content analysis. So 4 randomly selected transcripts were initially used to create a coding scheme by myself. Codes and contextual meaning were then conferred upon by myself and one of the authors. This resulted in the initial codebook. So again, 4 randomly selected transcripts were then selected and were coded using the initial codebook by myself and a research assistant. So then contextual meaning and case-level themes were conferred upon by myself and the research assistant, which resulted in the final codebook, and that was reapplied and applied to all 19 transcripts, ensuring that coding was standard. As a result, we have 5 participating cases. One was high socioeconomic status in rural, 2 were high socioeconomic status in urban, and 2 were low socioeconomic status in rural. In each of the 5 cases, a coach and athletic trainer were able to be recruited, and various other athletic trainers, nurses, and in one instance, a health and wellness coordinator were also included in the study. So we identified three themes that related to implementation decisions within high schools, which were the use of neurocognitive testing, or the impact, as I'll refer to it often, which is just briefly touched upon, Additionally, authority of athletic trainers and removal from play and return to play decisions of concussed students, and concussion education decisions. So all five cases decided to use neurocognitive testing, which is important to note because this is an unfunded regulation, and this is a privately purchased item that schools had to pay for privately. Now, as was kind of briefly just discussed, there is there's a preseason baseline neurocognitive score that has been used to gauge whether or not concussion has or has not occurred in concussed students. So, among cases, for example, there was mixed feelings towards the use of these tests. For example, the coach from Case 3 states, it's been very, very useful. It serves as a really good tool in assessing concussions. However, the athletic director has semi-different feelings. He states, I think it's a great tool, but I don't think it's an end-all be-all. Additionally, all five schools placed athletic trainers in control of removal from play and return to play decisions, and coaches felt comfortable taking the decision-making process out of their hands. The coach from Case 5 states, I understand that it's out of my hands at this point, so even if it's in the middle of a big game, it's what you do, referring to having the athletic trainer remove a potentially concussed student. All five cases decided to disseminate concussion education via a 30-minute concussion education video. Typically, it was the CDC heads-up video, which is very popular among schools. And some participants actually questioned the concussion education video's efficacy. The nurse from Case 4, when asked about the concussion education material used in her school, she states, I think it could be improved. I think it could be more in-depth. I think it could be more better evaluated if the students and parents truly understand what is involved. Now, there were differences in educational attainment depending on your status within the school. So, in all five cases, school personnel completed certificates of completion for the online video, and those were kept on file annually. Now, in four of the five cases, student athletes and parents signed a piece of paper saying that they watched the video. And the athletic director from Case 5 states why that situation had occurred. He states, there was attempts made to have athletes and parents sending certificates of completion, but you can imagine how challenging and kind of ineffective it was to actually collect all those certificates. To actually collect that from everybody and get all parents to get that in our hands is, like, very challenging. Now, additionally, we identified three factors that were related to three influential factors related to implementation. The first being the availability of a full-time athletic trainer, of the funding and capacity of the schools, and the honesty of student athletes. So participants noted that full-time athletic trainers greatly influenced the school's ability to implement the regulation. And they also stated that schools without a full-time trainer had a diminished capacity to successfully implement the regulation. The athletic director from Case 1 explains, in some school districts, they don't have that don't have a trainer. I don't know how they're doing it in reference to implementing the regulation. I don't say that in a negative way. I just know how much work it takes. Additionally, participants felt that capacity of their school constrained a school's ability to implement the regulation. Particularly, school nurses felt burdened by the amount of work associated with the regulation. When asked about what affects implementation, the health and wellness coordinator from Case 4 states, it's a lack of funding, it's a lack of time to train staff. It comes down to money and time. Now, in some instances, participants reported that they felt that some students were purposely failing the initial preseason baseline neurocognitive test. And this has a lot of implications for the actual ability to diagnose a concussion if one were to occur. The athletic trainer from Case 5 states, kids are pretty smart, and they figured out that if they don't try as hard on their baseline impact tests and their scores are lower, they have a better chance of returning to play sooner if they were to take a follow-up test. So, to discuss, all five schools use the neurocognitive testing program, and all five schools had athletic trainers as the forward-moving decision makers. This has implications because of the unfunded regulation that exists in Massachusetts and exists in most other 50 states. The fact that neurological tests are not free and they are paid for by each school individually has implications for schools' ability to actually use tests. Additionally, small schools that cannot afford a full-time athletic trainer may have a limited ability to actually implement the regulation. And In several instances, participants reported the fact that they felt several schools in their area didn't have a full-time athletic trainer. Additionally, recent research states that the impact tests may not actually provide reliable neurocognitive information pre- and post-test. So, there are implications for the self-reported concussion education that is being used within 4 of the 5 cases. Now, it's important to note here that the one case that actually collected completion certificates from each of the participants, from each of the students, was of high socioeconomic status, urban, and was the only school to have 2 full-time athletic trainers. So they had a heightened capacity in comparison to other schools. So they were able to actually collect completion certificates. Additionally, whether or not the concussion education via online videos, there is recent research that states that these actual videos may not raise concussion knowledge, especially while they may raise it initially and comparatively to intervention groups or control groups, educational attainment over time may not actually be as great as we thought initially. So there's strengths and limitations to any study. Recruitment was limited by time constraints here. We were unable to recruit a low socioeconomic status in urban school. And the qualitative approach does not allow generalizable claims and predictions outside of the 5 schools that were included as part of our study. But it does allow for a complex description of the phenomena at hand and provides important insight into the implementation process. Now, for research moving forward, research needs to assess the impact student honesty has on the effectiveness of neurocognitive testing programs. Now, a lot of these research that have come out recently focus on they don't control for the fact that students might actually be attempting to do poorly on one test or the other. Further, we need to examine the efficacy of online concussion education videos and determine the role that self-reporting may actually have on whether or not concussion education is being disseminated properly. And we need to determine the impact of the Massachusetts concussion regulation on the incidence and severity of concussions experienced by high school athletes in Massachusetts.
All right, thank you. Minutes for questions, comments?
Yeah, so I think it's, when we first started out doing the study, it was really difficult to get specific concussion data relative to just sports. So it was really difficult to look at pre and post, and also taking into account that there would most likely be an increase in reporting of concussions that would likely occur just due to the awareness that came out. So currently, no. I don't have any sort of way of going about that, but I'm sure there are there's much more data. I know that there's injury surveillance going on specifically to sports now, so I'm sure that information could definitely be used in evaluating the policies.
Great. Are there any questions? Thank you, Mitch.
Yep.